Welcome to another episode of Transparent Yoga and Everyday Life. This is another one of the India podcasts, and this one's about the third eye chakra. Later on in the podcast, Molly makes mention of JK, who, just for reference, is a Samaria Center teacher who helped lead the India tour. Enjoy.
Today we're talking about Anya Chakra. So let's just take a quick moment. We'll go through the chakras so far, and I'll ask you just to name any one attribute of all of the lower chakras. And lower in terms of like how they're arranged in the body, but not lesser, right? So all of the chakras are working in concert. And when people work specifically like therapeutically using the chakras, they're always thinking about all the chakras. Even if they see a deficiency or an excess in any one of those chakras, they're figuring out how all of the chakras are contributing to that excess or that deficiency, and always at a minimum looking at the ones above and below it. So the base chakra, the one at the base of the spine, is called
the root,
Mula. The root, Mula, Muladhara Chakra. And one attribute of Muladhara Chakra?
Color red.
Color red. Second chakra, it's a tricky, Svaristhana, or the sacral chakra, the home of the self, and how about an attribute of it? The
color's orange.
The color's orange. Rock that rainbow. Okay, and then the third chakra in the solar plexus?
Yellow.
Color yellow.
Its element is fire.
Its element is fire. It's the city of jewels, Manipura Chakra. The fourth chakra?
Anahata
Chakra, the heart chakra. One of its attributes?
Love, forgiveness.
Love and forgiveness. Yay! Fifth chakra? Throat chakra.
Cleansing,
purification. Jerry told a great story about Shiva cleansing all of sort of the sins of the world in the throat.
Yeah, the poison.
That poison through this poison that took in. Is that another one of maybe the more tricky names? Well, I guess it all depends on how you look at it, right? Vishuddha. And so now we get up to the sixth chakra, and the sixth chakra is Anya Chakra. Yep. Jerry's pointing to his eyebrow center, so that's the location of it. Does anyone know any other attributes about Anya Chakra?
Wisdom.
Om.
What did you say?
Om.
Om is its bija mantra, yeah. Om is its seed sound. A couple things about Anya Chakra. So it is said to be like the seat of intuition. And that word Anya means something like command. It's like command central. It's also called the divine eye. And we've met a few people on our trip called Divya. And Divya means divine. And so it's also called Divya Chakshu. But I like the Divya part especially because we've met so many people called Divya. So it's that divine eye. So some of the qualities of this, well, one thing that's interesting we talked about on that very first day with Muladhara is so much wisdom was available to these rishis and sages so long ago that they didn't speak of in a way that we really understand, or they didn't have the same kind of technology clearly to like go into the body and see what was occurring in the body. But it is really interesting about how all of the chakras seem to be associated with a really important gland of the endocrine system in the body. We also talked about how that staff of Caduceus, that's the symbol of medical doctors, crosses seven times, and it has two snakes and a double helix. So coming from a very different tradition, having the same symbology. So the gland that's associated with Anya Chakra is the pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland is sometimes also referred to as like the master gland because it regulates some really important hormonal functions. So that's just kind of cool. Some of the things about the Anya Chakra. So the color is said to be something like sometimes people say like indigo blue or purple or white, but we'll kind of stick with purple, which is helpful, I think, in thinking about, trying to remember and thinking about the colors of the rainbow. Roy G. Biv. The idea here is that it's this divine eye, and it's our ability to have a couple different things. One is like a master sense of intuition, and that we can really cultivate this third eye, especially if we've cultivated really strongly all of the chakras below, so that we can really totally trust our intuition, and that we can have these senses of something that's occurring, and we can trust them and think of them as being real. And oftentimes, perhaps more real than what your head, what your mind is telling you, right? So in Patanjali's yoga, which is the yoga we're studying, the whole sort of path, if it could be distilled, is to use the mind to change the mind, right? That the mind is full of trickery, but it's also filled with wisdom. Stephanie has told a story, a little thing many times, that one of her teachers talked about how the mind is very clever, but also very stupid. Right? So it's like, it's really smart and has a lot of wisdom for you, but it's also kind of wily, right? And we know that just by whatever level of practice we have, we know that our mind is at a constant play, right? It's constantly at trickery and play, and making us believe things that aren't true or create stories that are unhelpful. But when we harness the mind, we can use those very same powers to change the mind, right? So this is the wisdom that we can also gain through Anya Chakra. As we think of that, we can also think about that the mind is, in all of the scriptures, and especially in the Gita, is we're constantly reminded that this is no easy task. And Arjuna says to Krishna at one point, he says, oh, Krishna, the mind is so hard to control. It's like trying to control the wind, right? And so we can also be very tender with ourselves and other people that are having a hard time controlling the mind, because it is, in fact, hard to control, so it takes a lot of practice. But as we gain that control, we begin to be able to really see, and we can really see what's true, what's real. So we trust our intuition. We have that ability for really clear seeing. Those of you who are familiar with the Stephen Cope book, Yoga for the True Self, he talks about developing these two pillars simultaneously, clear seeing and calm abiding, right? So we want to have clear seeing, but we also have to have calm abiding. Because it's also said that everything that there is for us to see is difficult. And if we could actually see all that was going on, but we don't have calm abiding, that's when we might go crazy. And one Swami that I learned from a long time ago described this as the difference between a breakthrough and a breakdown, right? The breakthrough is like we can really see clearly. The breakdown is we can see clearly and we have no ability to handle it. So we're developing those two things simultaneously. I also think of this idea of clear seeing as, I call it my yoga x-ray specs. And it's part of the thing that when we really develop satsang and we develop community, also really helps us to be able to move through the world with confidence. So when I say I could develop my yoga x-ray specs, that means that I can see through you and I can see through anyone. Meaning I can see through anything that you're doing, any way that you're acting, anything that is trying to me or trying to you. And I can use that ability and wisdom of the Anya Chakra to be able to see directly through and the reality of who and what that other person is. And then as I develop that too, I can also walk around the world, and especially in my satsang, under the belief, when we talked about this crossroads, I can have this crossroads, this one belief that people are mad at me, they're not forgiving me, that I've frustrated them, that they don't like me, whatever. Or I can walk through life, especially within my satsang and then with the larger community, saying, in fact, people see me too, because they've developed their Anya Chakra. So even when I'm like behaving badly, the people who love me and support me and surround me, they can at once see that, like, ungainly behavior, but they can also see all the way through that to my true nature. And that allows me to feel much more courageous in the world. Any of us feel more courageous in the world when we believe that people are looking at us through kind and loving eyes. So we develop both of these things simultaneously. This is also in the Gita, where Krishna talks about the true yogi is the one who sees Atman in all beings and all beings in Atman. And we've talked about that a couple of times. And that's a lot of what we hope to develop in ourselves, but also the importance of satsang, right? We start to develop this in a smaller group, both in terms of what I choose to believe people are seeing in me, that they're seeing Atman in me, they're seeing themselves in me, they're seeing a divine being in me. And also that I'm always practicing being able to see that divine in other people, and I'm using my divine eye. One other thing that I wanted to talk about then is somebody was asking me about darshan and what the idea of darshan is. And so darshan comes from the root drish. Drish is to see. Okay, so can you think of a word in yoga that we use a lot in our yoga asana practice?
Drishti.
Drishti, right? So we use drishti, that's like that focal point that we look at in order to be able to concentrate and focus. So that same root is within the word darshan. So darshan refers specifically to a seeing between a student and a teacher. People even talked about, like, with Mahatma Gandhi, and many teachers, but what, like with Mahatma Gandhi, if they would like see him even on a train, right, through a train window or something, and he looked at them, they'd be like, I've received darshan from Mahatma Gandhi. So there's also a really important part about Ajna Chakra that's specifically about that student-teacher relationship and that ability that we like really see each other, and that the student and teacher are equally important. And that, I think, is something that is lost, maybe, when people, we've talked a lot about, like, this cultural appropriation and the appropriation of yoga, and we've, I think, I know I have really lightened my heart through this experience, and as a teacher, being able to give a more, the response that I gave before, I feel like I can give with even more conviction, that every person I've met in this country is delighted that we are taking the spirituality of India and the ideas of India and bringing them to the United States and sharing them. And Swami Vivekananda, who was the man, talked a lot about this, about how what we should be doing is bringing the best of all countries to each other, and that one of the things that India has in spades is this deep sense of spirituality, and that the other westernized countries, that was one of the key things that they were missing. And so that's actually so far the opposite from some like stealing cultural appropriation, and instead this gift to ourselves and also such an honoring of this other country that we're taking the very best from that. And at the same time, I think especially in that guru-student relationship, sometimes those kinds of things, if they're not taught well or understood well, it's a power dynamic, right? So that can definitely, we all have sort of this addiction to power. And this beautiful book that was gifted to me by Pandit Rajmani, The Pursuit of Power and Freedom. It's something that we all seek. We all seek power and we seek freedom. But we seek power in all different kinds of ways. And so we want to harness the power that we're trying to seek to be this really grounded power, and not power that we wield over other people. And we talked about that a little bit on the Isha Ashram, right? And talking about the different volunteers and the different experiences we had with admonishments from the volunteers. And we were all able to roll with it, but at the same time realizing that maybe some people were really undeveloped and they were just so excited to have that opportunity to tell us to sit down and shut up. And that we could hear that same admonishment from somebody else who seemed more developed, and it actually wouldn't be a problem. And it would actually be a gift that someone is corralling you, right? We need corralling. And so that's something that I see, at least in my limited experience, that can be really a little bit bastardized in our culture when people have not a lot of development, but this little bit of power. And then they're like, oh, I'm your guru, you know? And so you just do whatever I tell you to do. And that's not exactly how it should be. Many of us have had that experience with teachers. And my original teachers, I definitely had that experience with. And I learned so much from them, so I don't ever want to denigrate them. But as I reflect back, they were super immature, but they had this little bit of power, and so they were using it to, like, jam someone's leg behind their head, or telling me to quit my band, because if I didn't quit my band, then I was hanging out with untoward people, and I could never gain spiritual mastery. And I did quit my band at that time, and it was one of the most depressing and wrong things that I've ever done in my entire life, and luckily able to come back to that. So that Buddha-student relationship, in a sense, is a relationship of equality, because the student is as joyful and happy to find the teacher as the teacher is to find the student, right? So the fact that a teacher has any students at all, first of all, is what allows them to be a teacher. But also, there are so many students that come to a teacher, but there are so few of those students that have really, like, the discipline and the tenacity and the desire and the humility to be the kind of student that a teacher can really teach. So both of those roles are incredibly valuable. And that's something I would want you to understand in general as you find different teachers, that they're different roles, but they're of equal importance and they're equally cherished between student and teacher. It goes both ways. And so when you talk about being glad that I'm your teacher, and that makes me so happy. And as I older I get and the more I practice, the more it's easier for me to believe in myself as a teacher too, because coming from obviously the Western paradigm, for me, I feel like I've really eschewed the idea that I would be like, don't look at me, you know, I'm just fumbling along as best as I can, just like you guys are. And then at the same time, over time, being able to honor the fact that I am a teacher to many people, and I'm a teacher to most, if not all of you. Well, I'm a teacher to all of you. To some of you, I am your teacher. And so as I understand that better and honor that better, then it's easier for me to accept when you say, I love you being my teacher, because it doesn't make me feel like, oh God, like, don't put me on a pedestal. It makes me think, thank you so much, and that I will never, ever dishonor that. I will never disrespect it. I will never in any way use that position as a position of hierarchy. I would only use it as a position of strength where we both get to develop this mutual relationship. So if I am your guru, if someone's your guru, then you are their shishya, right? Which is such a great word, shishya. So that darshan is also something that goes between guru and shishya. And so when we develop that Anya Chakra on both sides, that also helps the shishya to be able to see the guru as, I can really learn from this person and I honor this person, but not just totally like blindly. And be discriminating, right? There's that viveka that we can also be very discriminating. So also, you know, I see my guru do something that I'm like, not so much, right? That I can also be discriminating enough to say, well, it's a human being that's being a teacher. And I can also be able to say, oh, that's my teacher, and she or he did this thing. That's not one of the things I should follow, right? So we develop that ability for discrimination through that divine eye. And then the teacher also is being discriminating in the exact same way, but also discriminating about students. And so in the exact same way, like I see my student do something, I just think like, oh, whoops, right? Or, oh, you know, better tighten up that teaching or something like that. But also that just like a student doesn't want everyone to be their teacher, a teacher doesn't want everyone to be their student, right? So there's this ability for discrimination in the truest sense of the word, not discrimination like exclusion, but an ability to see like these students are ready and they're at the same readiness that I'm at. And so we can enter into this relationship. And there are some students who might not be ready, and there's some students who might be ready, but they're in a very different way. They need a different teacher than me or the teacher who they have, and that's all good too. And that's all coming from this Anya Chakra, this development of this divine eye, this ability to see, this Drish. You know, we've learned so much. My gratitude to JK is, I could weep and in my gratitude to JK. I mean, it's boundless. The generous sharing of his country and his culture. So generous and so heartfelt and so unhierarchical, and never making us feel like, why don't we know this, or teaching us how we should be, or what we should wear, or how we should act, but with such a sense of just kindheartedness and humility and generosity. So thank you. So all of this putting of stuff on our heads. You know, the very first day some of us were at that mansion together, and it was the first time that I had kumkum on my head. And I was so happy. I was like, oh my God, I have this red stuff on my head. It's so great. But I also had no idea if I was, like, wearing something that was weird. Like, if I was going around and having this thing that was like, oh, my God, why are you doing that? Like, that's so disrespectful, or or it's out of place or something like that. And the generosity of JK and the unbelievable generosity of what I've experienced in all of the Indian people that we've met just helped me to understand that when I asked JK, I said, well, what would you think? Would you just think it was a white girl with some red on her head? And he was like, yeah, pretty much. Or that you had been to temple, right? And so one of the reasons why we're putting it on our head is one, like we put it on our neck yesterday if we wanted to, is just that remembrance. Like I look at myself in the mirror or somebody else sees me and we could recognize in the mirror, recognizing ourselves like, oh, that's right, that's the path I'm on. And other people see us and they know that that's the path we're on. Which is why I also think we should be really judicious with all the little trinkets we wear and clothes we wear and symbols that we have and the altars that we build. And it's great to have all those, but it's also good to be discriminating. Like, I'm just wearing this shirt because I like this shirt. I just have this bindi on my head because I like the way the bindi looks on my head. And that's all fine and good, but we recognize that that's the extent of it. Or we also recognize that, actually, no, I'm doing this. I'm wearing this because when I look at it, it reminds me of something. And so that's what we want to do. So that there's that idea when we have that on our head, but it's also placed at that divine eye. Because that knowledge, again, like the story Jerry told yesterday, like knowledge coming to us, there's too much knowledge, there's too much information, there's too much coming in at once. And so we also protect our divine eye from knowledge that we can't handle, right? And knowledge that should not be coming into us at this time, or that we're not going to be able to know what to do with it. And so then finally, that third eye, it's in the realm of knowledge. It's also that, and maybe I said this right in the beginning, it's also that we can begin to, I guess in the terms of intuition, that we can begin to gain knowledge through very subtle means, that we don't have to gain knowledge like through a book or from a teacher or even from something we heard or saw directly, that we begin to really cultivate this ability to just absorb the true knowledge that we're able to absorb, and it doesn't have to come through the senses. And it's why we both want to protect it, but we also want to work to open it. And so then just in closing, then it finally makes sense then, if this was going to be really open, then I would want to be really grounded, right, Muladhara. I'd want to be able to be very fluid, right, with this information. Things that are fluid and moving in the end are much more stable than things that are rigid, right? That's like an architectural truism. We would want to be very, very strong, very courageous, very fearless. So that's that Manipura, and like very bright. We'd want to have our hearts really open and ability to be boundlessly compassionate and also boundlessly forgiving, because if we've got this open, we're going to see a lot of things that we also need to be forgiving of. And then we have the throat chakra, our ability to really purify and create the sense of purification and use that purification to be able to, again, mediate what's coming in and then how we're hearing it and how we're responding to it. And so we've got all of these kind of in place, and then we're up here. I said finally, but this is really finally. Also, the climax of the Gita is when Arjuna is ready to see Krishna in his true form, right? And he keeps saying, I'm not sure if you're ready to see this, Krishna or Arjuna. And then Arjuna pleads with him and says, I am ready. And when Krishna finally reveals him true self, like, it is not all pretty, right? There's everything inside that. And then Arjuna even says, okay, great, got it. Close it up and show up as the charioteer again, because this other thing is, like, way too trippy for me. So that is that ability for Arjuna in that moment to open up the divine eye. He can see Krishna in all of his manifestations. And then even knowing that he can see that says, great, grand, that's happened. The third eye is open. I can't actually live that way. I can't go through my life actually seeing Krishna in that form. So in the same way, we develop that ability that we can see, but we also are judicious in saying, but I actually don't want to always be experiencing all of the world in this way, right? And as we cultivate compassion, and particularly I think for us here in India, we see so much suffering, and a lot of us have thought about how do we not close off to that suffering because it's too much, but how do we at the same time not be totally, totally open to it? Because if we were so open to it all the time, we would just be wrecked, right? And then we wouldn't be able to move on. And again, just seeing JK specifically outside of that Chidambaram temple and all those people flocking to him and his ability to take out money and give it to the people that were right there and connect with them, but then also say, that's what I got. You know, that's what I got for you. So that ability that I can see this amount of suffering, I can do what I can do, and then I can close up for my own self-preservation and getting in the thrilling rider and move on. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejasvina Vadhitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.